This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Is there an expression, now I have to ask you this, in Israel for a monkey's wedding when it is raining but the sun is shining?
Boker Tov, I'm not aware of an expression in Hebrew, but strangely enough, we have a similar sort of day going on right here.
Okay, with, that's weird.
Some sunshine and apparently reports of rain around certain parts of Israel. So for the month of May, it's extremely strange weather for us. It's very seldom that we have rain at this time of year. And in fact, even snow on the Mount Hermon, which is even stranger. So we are definitely experiencing some strange weather. And I'm not familiar with the term in Hebrew that equates to a monkey's wedding, but I do, of course, know that term. And of course, it is Lag BaOmer. So some would say Lag Sameach for Lag BaOmer.
Okay, that I've never heard.
Some unfortunate things going on for Lag BaOmer. First of all, just to talk a little bit about Lag BaOmer, it is the 33rd day of the Omer, and hence it's called Lag BaOmer. The letters, the Hebrew letters, Lamed Gimel, which pronounced Lag, are really 33, because in Hebrew we use letters to mean numbers as well. And so in the alphabetic form of the number 33, you get Lag, and therefore Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer. And there are three separate things that kind of flowed together to bring us to this day of Lag BaOmer. The first of which is it was believed that the illness that was being suffered by Rabbi Akiva's students and the pandemic that killed something like 24,000 of them suddenly ended on this 33rd day of the Omer. The other thing that happened on this day was that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who's believed to be the author of the Zohar, which is a very Kabbalistic text in Judaism, he is believed to have died today, and that's therefore the anniversary of his death. And of course, it also commemorates the revolt by Bar Kochva against the Romans. All of these unrelated things come together today. And of course, it was always very traditional to light bonfires across Israel. And of course, to visit the grave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which is located on Mount Meron. Fortunately, over the years, the authorities have prevailed on people to light less bonfires than used to be the case. I remember in the old days, let's say even 10 years ago, pilots who were flying over Israel would say, it looks like the country is burning because of all the fires that we get up and down the country. And even though it's a great social gathering and people would do a kumzitz and get together and have a barbecue or put some marshmallows on the fire, and it was a great opportunity for people to get together, it was very polluting and very dangerous. And so the authorities have prevailed on people to stop the lighting of bonfires, or at least slim down significantly. Once upon a time, every self-respecting class in primary school would commandeer a piece of open land in their neighborhood and make sure that all the class were invited, and they would burn all the wood that they could find in their neighborhood, including scaffolding from nearby building sites, and whatever could be found would all be burnt on Lag BaOmer. All of that practice has really receded in recent years, and that's a very welcome, because it was dangerous and because it was polluting and because it wasn't good for the animals. And really, we don't have that smoky feel today, which was traditional on Lag BaOmer. Also, the whole tradition of visiting Mount Meron to visit the grave site of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai this year has been outlawed due to the danger in the north of Israel. Unfortunately, there are still people who think that the law doesn't apply to them. And the rules which have been laid down in order to protect their safety don't apply to them either. And thousands of them actually tried to turn up yesterday at Mount Meron for the traditional Lag B'Omer ceremony, and which usually involves also cutting the hair of boys who've reached the age of 3 years old in the last short while, the so-called Upshirina, which is traditional to take place on Lag B'Omer and at Mount Meron. Now, I feel very strongly about those people who've decided to turn up at Mount Meron, even though the authorities have said don't do it, because they occupy manpower and they risk their lives and the lives of the people who are policing to make sure that they don't turn up there. Firefighters and policemen and other authorities who have had to be laid on at Mount Meron while we are fighting a war. People think they can just commandeer buses and turn up in their thousands. And I think it's not okay. And of course, there are people who would say, oh, these are the same people who also refuse to sign up to join the army. They come and risk the authorities while doing that. So we all feel very strongly about not turning up to Mount Meron this year. And as the authorities have said, you can still commemorate the memory of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai by not turning up to Mount Meron. Do it at home. Do it in a slightly different way. I don't think that there is anything in the religion that compels people to actually have to turn up physically to this place, even though it has all kinds of Kabbalistic feelings about it and lots of spirituality that surrounds the event. But this year is not a good year to join, to turn up there. So whoever's celebrating Lag B'Omer, I hope you're doing it safely and you're doing it well and in good spirit.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the open hostilities that broke out yesterday in the Strait of Hormuz. That's involving the US, Iran, Oman, the UAE. What is the current status? I think there's a lot of people listening that are wondering, is this about to head back to war?
Well, when we talk about open hostility, we're kind of wondering whether it was there were greater hostilities in the Straits of Hormuz or whether there were greater hostilities over the internet. Because when one sees what was going on the social media sites and the to and fro between Iran and the US, it was pretty hostile, to say the least. Let's just try to backtrack over the events of yesterday. President Trump declared Operation Project Freedom in order to try to allow those ships that wish to cross the Straits of Hormuz to do so safely and to do so freely. Many of the tankers that are stuck in the area of the Persian Gulf are empty, do not have oil on board, are unable to go somewhere else to load up with oil. Of course, the owners of those tankers are losing a lot of money for each day that they are not working. Mm. The crew on the ships are running out of supplies. They've been there for some months already without being able to move. So the US decided yesterday to take things a little step forward and to clear the Straits of Hormuz to allow those ships to leave. And as President Trump reiterated, many of them are uninvolved. They belong to countries and belong to entities that are simply uninvolved in this war and have no interest in it whatsoever, except that they wish to move their ships around. Well, the Iranians didn't really like that. There was an announcement yesterday that the US had managed to allow two ships to traverse the Straits of Hormuz safely. We then understood that the Iranians were firing against ships that were trying to move through the Straits of Hormuz. The US then announced that they had destroyed a number of Iranian naval vessels. And then the question is asked, of course, how is it that President Trump stood up saying the Iranian Navy is at the bottom of the sea when all of a sudden they turn up with naval vessels? And the answer is a relatively simple one, which is that in Iran, there are sort of two parallel worlds, particularly in relation to the military activities. On the one hand, you have the regular Iranian army, and on the other hand, we have all of the military activities of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC. They have their own military operations. So when President Trump said that the Iranian Navy was at the bottom of the sea, that was the regular Navy. He wasn't referring to the IRGC Navy, whose ships yesterday, it seems, the US attacked. And there are reports that 6 or 7 of these naval vessels were attacked and were sunk yesterday in the area of the Straits of Hormuz. My understanding is that those were vessels that particularly belonged to the IRGC arm of the Iranian naval capability. And then things went relatively quiet. There was lots of social media backwards and forwards, Trump claiming that he'd sunk these ships. The Iranians claimed that no ships were going through the Straits of Hormuz. Ironically, none of this really seemed to trigger an end to the ceasefire, because that sort of level of open hostility would have thought triggered a statement saying the ceasefire is over. However, one of the things that also happened yesterday was that something like 15 missiles were fired from Iran towards the United Arab Emirates. We understand that there were something like 12 ballistic missiles and a number of other missiles, including drones that were sent, all targeted towards the United Arab Emirates. It's not clear to me why Iran decided that the United Arab Emirates should be its target on a day like yesterday. But what we do know is that Israel's Iron Dome was on hand in the United Arab Emirates in order to intercept those incoming missiles from Iran, and did a pretty good job of it, because in the end, it seems as if though the damage was relatively limited. We do understand that there was an oil refinery hit. I don't exactly know how all of that happened, but there was some damage that was hit. But certainly, in the most part, the 15 missiles that were fired towards the UAE yesterday, in the most part, were intercepted or allowed to fall in safe areas. And for that, the UAE can thank our Iron Dome operation and teams and soldiers who have been sent to the UAE in order to operate this Iron Dome for the UAE, thanks to the Abraham Accords, which have facilitated all of that. We also understand that there was some damage done in Oman, again by an Iranian missile. But all of this doesn't seem to have damaged the notion that the ceasefire is still in place. So we will be watching.
Which makes me think that they still want it to be in place, because if they wanted to use yesterday as a to show Iran broke the ceasefire, and now as an excuse almost to go back, or reason to go back to full war, I think they would have done it. But the fact that it didn't immediately escalate into active conflict makes me think that that is not what they want.
I agree. I think that President Trump particularly is sort of on a path towards somehow trying to create a situation where, on the one hand, the Straits of Hormuz are open and therefore the oil price hopefully will come down from its current peak. It's like, I think it was peaking at around $114 per barrel in the Brent crude price. So I think he wants the oil price to somehow come down, and opening the Straits of Hormuz will facilitate that. But I don't think he wants to create another open conflict situation. I think he'd rather allow that to head into some talks and to try and end it that way. So I do agree that if he was looking for a pretext in order to reopen military conflict, he certainly had it laid in the palms of his hands yesterday, and he didn't seize that opportunity. So I agree with you. Also in Israel, ironically, while many people were watching the situation nervously and potentially expecting to have to run to bomb shelters, and the army was saying that they are on the highest possible alert, there were no changes to any of the home front instructions. So everybody was instructed to keep going as usual, business as usual, without changing any of our usual practices and routines. And so that for me indicated that Israel is not expecting Iran to try to drag Israel into this particular stage of the conflict, and that it's going to remain very firmly in the Straits of Hormuz and potentially between the US and Iran, and of course involving potentially again some other countries in the area, including the UAE or Oman or potentially even Saudi Arabia. I think the UAE might have been targeted because they were somehow cooperating with the United States in order to free up area around the Straits of Hormuz to allow those ships to move through. And the Iranians don't like that very much. They like to try and keep their control over the Straits of Hormuz as much as possible. President Trump has been trumpeting how successful this blockade of the Iranian ports has been. I think it has been successful. I think that the Iranians are under threat. It's very, very difficult for us to know right now who is holding the upper hand in this particular conflict. On the one hand, I've read many reports would say that the US is only in a lose-lose situation because either they will have to come to an agreement, which won't be a great agreement, or this is going to drag on for ages and ages and ages, which the US wouldn't want. So either way, they lose out. I have also read that Iran is very much under the cosh right now, very much under
pressure. I'm sure they are. That's what we saw yesterday was an act of desperation and pressure, them attacking the UAE and ships in the area. It has to mean that Iran is under huge pressure.
Yeah, so of course, a very interesting stage of the conflict. We will continue to watch to see how things pan out for the rest of the week. But it's certainly going to give us some talking points and, of course, for listeners to join in and air their views on things.
Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, I hope you have a fantastic day. And we'll catch you tomorrow morning, 7:45, for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.